and welcome to another edition of Visions with me, Yudalee Wickham Ashby. And today, I'm deeply honored to have three wonderful people with me to discuss a subject that is pretty sensitive and can be traumatic for persons who are experiencing renal or kidney failure. I have the president of the Kidney Association of Barbados, Sadie Ann Cisnett, the vice president, Adrian Boyce, and the public relations officer, Sabrina Newton. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you very much. Lovely to be here.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so let us start by explaining what is renal failure or kidney failure. Sadie Ann, do you want to take that question?
I most certainly can. Renal or kidney failure is simply when your kidneys are so damaged that they stop producing urine, basically. And that can happen in many, many ways. Kidney disease is sometimes hereditary, like polycystic kidney disease. Sometimes you have perhaps an injury of the kidney. There's some autoimmune diseases. And then for many of us in the Caribbean and in the world, we have kidney disease as a result of NCDs or non-communicable diseases, such as high blood pressure, which is hypertension, or diabetes.
And when this type of diagnosis is presented to an individual, generally, what are some of the next steps? What happens after you've had such a diagnosis delivered to you?
Well, we have different stages of kidney disease, as you would have different stages of other diseases like cancer. So the first few stages, stages one and two, can actually sometimes be reversible depending on the reason for it. If it is lifestyle, you can have lifestyle changes and you can actually reverse the signs that those begin in very beginning stages of kidney disease. But once you reach stages like three and four and then end stage, it is either managed by medication to see if the progress of the disease can be slowed down, or dialysis is your next option. If I can expand, there are two types of dialysis that we have in Barbados right now, peritoneal or PD dialysis, and that is where you have fluid that's introduced into the peritoneum in the stomach area to clean your blood of toxins, because that's what the kidneys generally do, clean your body, clean your blood of toxins, or hemodialysis, where your blood is actually taken, cleaned, and then put back in.
Okay, so can you give us an overview of the Kidney Association of Barbados? Like, what's its mission, vision, and so on?
Our mission statement is adding value to the lives of its members, their families and friends, and the public through its various social and educational programs. That is our mission statement. And at this point in time and in the recent past, we've mainly been focused on public education, our presence at health fora, both online and in person, health fairs, and school presentations. At this time, however, from this council, we are hoping to switch things up just a little bit. And this year's council is hoping to make the shift towards more tangible support to its members and advocacy, particularly in terms of the human tissue transplant bill. This year's council, that's our main goal at this time.
Okay.
Right now, about 80% of deaths in Barbados are from NCDs, non-communicable diseases, hypertension, diabetes, like we spoke about earlier. And untreated, that is linked to kidney failure. When we consider that renal failure not only arises from congenital or genetic issues, but also from autoimmune diseases, the end stage condition of, as I said, diabetes and hypertension, we urgently need to put renal disease in the spotlight at this time. And not a lot of people hear about it unless, you know, you have friends or family that are going through it. And we definitely need to change that in the general public.
Many of the individuals who experience renal or kidney failure end up having to do dialysis. Explain the process in terms of, you know, going onto the dialysis machine and what are some of the concerns that you as an association have regarding the service of dialysis?
Yeah, for hemodialysis, you have two access points, which is either a fistula or a catheter. With the catheter, it's a little bit more quicker because once the catheter is installed, it can be used the same time. But for the fistula, it's an outpatient surgery, and it takes about 3 to 4 months to heal or be able to be used. So if it is that it is an emergency where that you just, you know, go straight into end-stage kidney failure, they would usually put in a temporary catheter until a fistula is used or permanent catheter can be used. The process in terms of going to dialysis, there are 4 places that you can go to do hemodialysis, which is the hospital or SILS Dialysis Clinic. And SILS have 3 branches, which is 1 in Warrens, 1 in Belleville, and 1 in St. John. And you arrive at the center, you know, about half an hour earlier, so you can prepare yourself. You need your blood pressure cuff, you need your sheets and whatever else to be comfortable in the center, because it's a chilly area. And you are either, as I said, hooked up based on your catheter or you're hooked up on the fistula. So based on the access point that you have, that is how it goes.
Okay, so Adrian, what are some of the preventative measures that can be taken by average Barbadians to prevent kidney failure?
As we were touching on that question, I just want to piggyback a bit on the second type of dialysis used, which is peritoneal dialysis.
Mm-hmm.
This is a home therapy option that is given by the Queen Elizabeth Hospital. And the machine that we use is a cycler, right? Now, this cycler uses fluid called dienyl or extranyl in different strengths. And different strengths, from weakest to strongest, will gauge how much toxins the fluid will pull once it's inserted into the peritoneal cavity in the abdomen. Okay? So this would be, if you have stage 4 or 5 renal failure, the prescription is given by the doctor, the nephrologist. Brinostools are the distributors of Baxter, which is the brand name of the cycler and also the fluids as well. This process usually takes between, depending on your stage, between 6 to maybe 10 and a half hours, right? Patients usually do it overnight or depending on their lifestyle, if they have day jobs or whatever. There's also, as I have mentioned, extranyl, which is used or kept in the abdomen during the day. So it's almost a 12-hour, 24-hour as you go about your day. It is there pulling the toxins out of your body. And as you hook up to your cycler at the end of the day, it releases or drains into the drain bag.
Mm-hmm.
We would like to say that this procedure is also free of cost to the patient once you're a Barbadian citizen. And we do thank, you know, the Barbados government for having that allotted for us, because as you may get to know later on, the cost of dialysis, whether hemo or otherwise, if it were to be paid by the patient, is extremely expensive. Extremely expensive. Sometimes to the cost of maybe $300 a session. And I know a lot of private centers here in Barbados, they may charge $350. And you're recommended to have at least 3 of these sessions a week. So you can only imagine how hard it is on the patient. If they're not able to work at a point in time, you're supposed to get 3 sessions at $350. That's a lot of money per week, just mm-hmm. your health a week. So you can imagine, in terms of being preventative, many, as Sadian had mentioned, are through lifestyle, autoimmune diseases, as well as they could be hereditary. I know of Alan Haynes, who has a situation where his mom, sister, and himself have kidney failure. So it depends on where it is at. In terms of lifestyle, persons smoke and drink a lot, you know, and they don't take care of their body, don't keep hydrated, don't keep active, and you'll find that they have degeneration of the kidneys then. The thing is about it, many persons don't recognize the mild or small indicators of renal failure. And that is why our mission is to get the literature out there, the education out there, not only for adults and older people, but from children, because we have a lot of children on our programs as well. So to get the information out there to recognize these indicators is important. in terms of hereditary, you work together as a family to find out, you know, where it's stemming from. A lot of people tend to think that renal failure is a doomsday announcement, you know, and they tend to keep it to themselves. But we're hoping that we can, you know, make it a more comfortable space to talk, to express yourself, also to give persons a positive mindset about it. Although it's a negative thing, have a positive mindset about it, because clearly it is something that affects the individual psychologically when they first find out that they have renal failure, you know. Mm-hmm. What I would say, and also the NCDs and so on, untreated hypertension, diabetes and so on, is also a cause. But in my case, it was somewhat different. And this is where Barbadians need to be more mindful of their surroundings and the places they touch and so on. Because you can also have a breakdown of the internal organs from leptospirosis or another borderline disease called hantavirus, right? Mm-hmm. Which is a more lethal form, in a sense, of leptospirosis. And it's become more prevalent in Barbados now. I think that persons will understand that hantavirus was once nothing that we got here in Barbados, but clearly the disease from rodents, based on what comes through the port or whatever, will give you that situation where you have a breakdown of the internal organs, your heart, liver, and so on. So in my case, I had contracted hantavirus, and it started to break down the internal organs, specifically the kidneys.
Right.
I think it was about the second case in Barbados. So they were doing some extensive research during my tenure at the hospital the first time, until the blood results came back from Miami. I went to Trinidad and Miami, in which I was diagnosed with hantavirus. So these are things I have to take into consideration and be more mindful, you know. I encourage persons not to walk around barefooted outside and touching certain things outside and then going to eat and not be mindful, you know. And I think that COVID would have increased the conscience of sanitizing your hands and so on.
Yes.
So that is another way in which, you know, you can prevent something like this from happening, because not only is it life-changing for the individual, but also the family members as well, you know. And we definitely encourage family members to be there for their loved ones, the patients that we see or we come to know during these programs, you know?
Right.
Yeah, that's my 2 cents.
Okay, a very worthy 2 cents. Okay, yeah. So Sabrina, Adrian has started us off on, you know, what the personal experience has been like and how you became someone living with renal failure. So can you share your experience and how you became a kidney dialysis patient?
Right. So as they said, there are some kidney disease that is hereditary. Mine is hereditary. I have polycystic liver and kidney disease. And I was diagnosed when I was 21 years old. And I pretty much had it, as they said, in terms of the lifestyle changes, I had it under control. I had changed my diet, etc., etc. It was only during the pandemic is when my kidneys start to deteriorate. As Sadie was saying, in the first and the second stage, it is, you know, manageable and whatever else have you. But after the third stage, it usually goes down a little faster. So when I hit the fourth stage of renal failure, it didn't take long for me to get to end stage. So when I hit the fourth stage, my doctor had said to me, well, it is time to get the fistula put in, because we are actually on our way and we know that there's no clear path to come back. So we are going forward. However, we haven't put in place who in my family has the gene of the polycystic kidneys. My daughter, we are going to do some testing for her now, because she now turned 20. And we are seeing where it lies and where it goes. So after we put in the fistula, it took about, as I said, 2 to 3 months to heal. My fistula went in February, and by June, I was on dialysis. So it didn't take long for me to get the end-stage renal failure. And the process, as Adrian said, it is hard on the psyche. The adjustment is hard, that's what I would say, because your kidneys work 24 hours a day. And for you to do this thing now in 4 hours or 3 hours, it puts some pressure on the body, because during hemo, as was mentioned before, the blood is taken from the body, it is cleaned, and then it is put back into the body, and the body is not accustomed to that process. You usually get BP drops, blood pressure drops during the session, because so much blood coming out at such a high rate, the body, you know, tends to go into shock. And then you have to figure out what your dry weight is. And dry weight is meaning what your body is at, like what you would call a resting place. So the optimal weight that you are at, where there's no liquid or excess fluid around your heart or your liver or in your extremities, like your hands and your legs, once all of that water or fluid is off of your body, that is where is the optimal place for your body. So you have to figure that out. And it isn't like a formula where you work out X, this or whatever. It is based on trial and error, where that, you know, when you go to the session, they will take off 3 liters off of your body. And based on cramping and other adverse effects, you would know that you have reached your dry weight. So if your body starts to cramp, your heart starts to race, you start to feel bad, those are the indicators that you have reached your dry weight. And unfortunately, when you get to that stage, the pain doesn't just go away. So it is something that you have to endure for probably the next hour or the next 3 hours or so until your body regulates. So that in itself can be a challenge. As I said, mentally going to the hospital every 2 days or every other day or whatever you have you to get 2 needles put in your hand, it gets you a little scared. I used to tell everybody in my first couple of months in dialysis, the night before dialysis, I couldn't sleep. When 2 o'clock and 3 o'clock, I used to be up tossing and turning because not knowing what is going to happen or how the session is going to go. But as you go along, it gets a little easier because you learn your body, you learn the situation. Sometimes if you eat the wrong breakfast before you go to the session, it can cause an adverse effect. A lot of patients vomit, a lot of patients have to come off the machine, and that's not an easy thing either, especially with the fistula, because you have to stop the bleeding from the arm when you take out the needles. So all of those things can cause challenges during the session and whatnot. So that in itself can cause a lot of psychological issues, and those are the things too that we as the Kidney Association were saying that we were trying to assist with the newer patients coming in terms of giving them pointers and helping them understand the situation and the process a little better so that they are better equipped when they go over to do the dialysis.
Okay, thanks, Sabrina. Now, Sadianne, what was your experience like and how did you come to this stage of kidney failure?
Well, we have 3 absolutely different experiences here. So I am actually a renal transplant patient. This time. So I have had my transplant. I have gone through kidney disease. Now I was 28 years old when I was diagnosed, and it appeared to be, because I don't think I have a complete diagnosis up to this point, but it appeared to have been hypertension at 28 years old. So I started with the nephrologist, Dr. Lisa Bell at the QEH, and we tried to manage the disease with medication. So hypertensive medication, steroids, whatever the case may be, we try to manage that. And it was going fairly well for a few years, but then the deterioration still continued. So I was being medically managed with medication for about 6 years until I reached end-stage renal disease. And end-stage is usually where you have about 10% or less of your kidney function that's left. Doctors then tend to put you on dialysis at that time. So in 2017, Dr. Bell then suggested that I need to go on dialysis. Our thought process, however, it was that because of my age, I was newly married. I got married in 2015. Throughout this process, was that we wanted to look for the possibility of transplant. Now, the QEH works with the charity Transplant Links to perform transplants at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital. Again, free of cost to the patient themselves. So it is part of the transplant program at the QEH. So once you are eligible, you're, I guess, otherwise healthy, you have a donor or someone that is willing to be tested to see if they are able to donate the kidney. At this time, we only have the living donor transplant program. So that's where, again, someone who is able to offer or donate their kidney to you. So all the testing goes on, all the blood tests go on, genetic typing to make sure that the person is going to be genetically compatible with you. And of course, there's consent to go along with that. There's even psychological checkups and testing as well at the QEH. So there's a whole gamut of tests that needs to be run. It takes about 6 months or so, but it's not a short process for that to occur. And then the team would give you a date for the transplant. So that was me in 2018. November 2018 was when I had my transplant from my brother, my younger brother, who was the one that donated his kidney to me. So that was my experience. So from 2011 or 2012 up to 2018 was my management of kidney disease. And then I became a renal transplant patient. So November this year would be 7 years that I was transplanted.
Okay. So as you said, Sidian, three different stories in terms of how you have arrived at kidney failure. And in your particular case, renal transplant.
Yes.
So what I have noted in all three of your sharing is that your family support has been there. It has been extremely good of your family members to offer that level of love and psychological support, emotional support, as well as physical support, because I imagine that there would have been periods where you needed someone to maybe just bring you a glass of water, assist you going to a meeting, to the supermarket, something. So tell us, each of you, I'll start with you, Sidian, what that did for you emotionally to see the love and support coming from your family members, and especially your donor, your brother, and your newly married husband. And then I'll hear from Adrian and then Sabrina in terms of what your family support has been like.
Well, I would say I thank God that my family support was there from the very beginning, to the point where I was talking about it with my family and talking about what Dr. Bell wanted to do in terms of the transplantation. And my brother looked at me and was like, okay, well, that'll be me, right? I didn't even have to ask or broach that topic with him. And the same for my husband. So they actually both got tested to be donors. It was simply that my brother was a better match for me. So I am extremely grateful and thankful that my family was so supportive. And it was to the point where there are things I didn't even have to ask for. It was just assumed that this is how it was going to be. That's my brother's personality in any case. So I don't have any other words but thankful and grateful to my entire family. My mom, who is now deceased, my dad, my brother, my aunts, uncles, everyone in my immediate family was extremely supportive, even in terms of, you know, sending, whether it's recipes or things that they would have seen online, treatments, natural treatments about, you know, how to reduce kidney disease or how to remedy that, make things better, slow down the disease, that kind of thing. So it was all hands on deck. And again, I don't have any other words but grateful and thankful to them.
Adrian?
Yeah, I think that for my situation as well, I had the greatest support from my family, my direct family. Also, my fiance, she was there from the very beginning until now, right? And also my church family as well, too. They're part of my community, part of my family. Like Sadie said, in terms of even sending literature, videos on kidney disease and renal failure and different things. And even my ones overseas that would find the medications they would try to get, like Sevelamer, Fosfobuckers, and so on. There's certain products that don't sell in Barbados that I would get from over there, gauze and that kind of thing that you would think is insignificant, but it's very important. Gauze and Tegaderm and Hypofix. These are things that anyone in the medical field would know is important to get. A Micropore as well. They would send for me, and I'd be so grateful for it because to buy it here is pretty expensive, right? especially at the rate that a kidney patient will use it every day. Every day you're using supplies, right?
Yes.
But the psychological, spiritual, and physical support was there. Unfortunately, though, there are a lot of patients who don't have that. And that's why the Kidney Association, we're looking to somewhat help fill that void, to be a place that patients can come to, you know, and receive that support that they need, whether psychologically. As Sadie had mentioned, we try to have a care package for them, that they have something tangible to say, well, look, you know, we have support through the association. They're not just abandoning us, right? They understand what we're going through, and they're trying to help us. And for that, I'm grateful.
Okay. And Sabrina?
Yes. So my family is not as big as Sadie's and Adrian's. My family is basically my mother, my daughter, and my sister, and my brother. And those were really supportive. My daughter is very supportive in the situation. And then my extended family, like Adrian was mentioning, I have an extended family of the kidney patients. So Alan Haynes, the past president, I was introduced to him before I even started dialysis. And another gentleman that goes to Zills in Warrens, I was introduced to him as well. And those two especially, they would have been who prepared me mentally for the journey of dialysis. Because when I was told that we will be starting dialysis, I wouldn't know what to expect and what would be done. So they gave me a lot of advice in the terms of things of do's and don'ts before dialysis, after dialysis, during dialysis, those kind of things. My family now, my boyfriend, he was my support in terms of support financially, because before I went to dialysis, so the January, which would have been, I had the fistula in February, January, I had to stop working. So there was no more, aside from NAS, there was nothing else coming in. So that in itself, my mother as well, she was supportive in terms of financial support. So that is something that, as Adrian was saying, everybody doesn't have. So that's something that the Kidney Association is, as he said, is trying to start and get on board with, assisting some of the patients that might not have that kind of support financially, mentally, and spiritually as well. Because that is one thing that Alan would have told me in the beginning, that you need some form of spiritual guidance during this process. And kidney patients do a devotion session on mornings, and that is something that really boosts your morale and boosts your spirit, give you a good head start to the day. And those are things, again, like I said, there are things that we as a community, the Kidney Association, need to do for our patients, because everybody doesn't have that in their family unit.
Okay, Sabrina. Sidian, Adrian, and Sabrina, this has really been a good conversation exploring what kidney disease is, what renal failure is, what the Kidney Association of Barbados does. And I would like us to continue this conversation, because there's a lot more that I think you need to share and educate the Barbadian society. So I would want to say, first of all, thank you for being so open and sharing with us. And secondly, to invite you back so that we can continue the conversation and explore some other areas of concern. So Sidian Cisnet, President of the Kidney Association of Barbados, Adrian Boyce, the Vice President, and Sabrina Newton, the Public Relations Officer, I say thank you, and I humbly bow to you for the excellent work you're doing with the association.
Thank You're you welcome. So much for inviting us, and we would love to continue this conversation. We have so much more to tell the public.
Definitely.
Thank you very much as well. It's been a pleasure being a part of this discussion.
Right. You have been listening to Visions with me, Yudley Wickham-Ashby, and my three special guests, Sidian Cisnet, Adrian Boyce, and Sabrina Newton from the Kidney Association of Barbados. Remember, you can reach out to me on 1-246-269-9660 or 1-246-430-7300. You can email me, visionsbarbados@gmail.com, And you can check this and past episodes by going to the VOB929.com website. Remember, love yourselves and love your neighbor just as much as you love yourself. So until next week, ciao.